Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As the holidays approach, my guest reminds us today that it's a time of both food and drink. Leslie Bloom is a journalist and writer on fashion, media, and culture. She's written for the Wall Street Journal and Vogue. Her book, Let's Bring Back, in 2010, was a nostalgic look at traditions, fashions, etiquette, cuisine, and sayings from past years that are worthy of revival in today's busy times. The success of that book has now spawned a whole series, and the first of the thematically inspired Let's Bring Back books is just out in time for the holidays, and it's devoted to the libation. Let's Bring Back the Cocktail Edition is a compendium of impish, romantic, amusing, and occasionally appalling potations from bygone eras. Featuring copious research, which Leslie can tell us about, while a few cocktails have come back into fashion, such as martinis and cosmopolitans, this book reminds us there was once a concoction for any occasion, and some are outrageous, some sound absolutely delicious. Leslie Bloom joins us today to talk about cocktails for the holidays. Leslie Bloom, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
Your first book 2 years ago, Let's Bring Back, was more about all sorts of cultural phenomenons and social fashions and the like. This new book, more about cocktails, but I'm really intrigued about what's driving this. You know, in a day when an email can serve as an invitation, a text can serve as a thank you, do you think people are sort of longing for a more formal life and more formal conventions that this era that you write about tends to have?
I don't know necessarily that people are longing for more formality, but I think that people are longing for more consideration. And I think, you know, right now we live in an era where we delete our correspondence and, you know, getting an invitation over email gets the information there. But it's not the same thing as opening up a beautiful invitation with handwriting or just a beautifully designed invitation from the mail or getting a thank you note or getting a letter from somebody. I mean, people express themselves very differently in email than they do in a letter. And I think that it really comes down to feeling a sense of connection and ritual, again, in an era that doesn't really value those things in the same way as people did in the past.
I look at like the success of Downton Abbey, where, you know, you have a very formal situation, you know, a country manor house and a lord and lady, and it's almost like a foreign culture that we're watching, and yet it's immensely popular.
Yeah, it really wasn't that long ago when you think about it also,
yeah.
But it's a totally different planet. I mean, we might as well be watching Versailles. I think, again, in terms of, you know, that level of formality, I think that even, you know, the lord and the lady of the manor found that level of ritual to be taxing. It was a full-time job. I don't think anybody's longing for, you know, return to serfdom or that sort of thing, but maybe just candles at dinner would do.
Right, maybe dressing for dinner, for that matter.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, candles can even make meatloaf look lovely. So, I mean, it's just, you know, a little bit of old-fashioned, you know, gestures like that can really create a quality of life that just doesn't seem to be embraced right now.
Well, with the success of Let's Bring Back, the first book, you've now embarked on a new series, and the first one in that series is the Cocktail Edition. First of all, how many books are you looking at in this series?
Well, right now we have two, and as you said, the first one celebrated all kinds of things, fashions, foods, landmarks, words. And now we have the Cocktail Edition. The next edition that we have coming out is the Lost Language Edition, which celebrates hundreds of words, phrases, insults, idioms, expressions from times gone by that have been lost over the years. And there may be a few more in the hopper after that.
That's right. And, of course, even in this book, there's all these wonderful bon mots having to do with drinking. Dorothy Parker, Mae West, Humphrey Bogart, all these different, you know, nice quotes that are part of the book. But let's talk about, you know, there's very little different in what you receive if you ask for a drink or a cocktail. But I think there's a world of difference in how we perceive a cocktail as opposed to just having a drink.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the word cocktail implies that there's some sort of artistry that went into it. The cocktail is a drink, though, to be fair. It just happens to be a liquor with a mixer. But, you know, that just leaves a huge array of possibilities there. And, you know, there are a lot of cocktails that haven't been called cocktails. They've been called fancy drinks, or they've had, you know, really specific names like a shrub. And each of those things has really specific components to make them. fall into those respective categories. But I think, you know, the difference between going out for a drink and the difference between going out for a cocktail indicates that when you're going out for the latter, the cocktail, it seems like it's more of an occasion.
Mm-hmm. And you actually researched where we got that name, cocktail, for mixed drinks. What's the best story you can come up with?
Well, that was a really funny journey to try to figure out where that word came from, because the bottom line is nobody knows. And I called up a good friend of mine who was, he's one of the heads of the old Oxford Dictionary, and he just said, you know, many people pretend that they know, but they don't really. So what we did is I didn't want to give it up because there are so many colorful stories that have been associated with the word over the years. My favorite was supposedly a Revolutionary War era innkeeper named Betsy, another old-fashioned name you don't hear very often, Flanagan, Betsy Flanagan. She apparently used rooster's tail or cocktail feathers as swizzle sticks when serving drinks during the American Revolution. And she apparently lived in either Virginia or Pennsylvania, depending on who's telling that story. But, you know, according to one version of that tale, the very spirited Ms. Flanagan roasted a rooster that she stole from a loyalist and then festooned all the drinks that she served with the cock's feathers. So hence cocktail. So that's one of, you know, half a dozen prominent theories about where the word came from, and whether it's true or not, we don't know.
Is that the one you like best?
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of them are you know, really quite great, and some of them are more cultural in terms of, like, for instance, there's one that says that the term arose from the West African word cocatel, which means scorpion. And so, you know, some people say the drink may have borrowed its name from the scorpion-like sting that it delivers. But I think that the Betsy Flanagan one is probably the most spirited and amusing. And that's really what I was going for in this book, was to really look at the humor in drinking culture and the humor that went into making a lot of these 144 lost historical cocktails over the last, you know, two millennia.
And it's interesting that you don't choose cocktails that have always been around, or ones that have come back, like a sidecar's come back in recent years, or an old-fashioned was out of fashion for a while, and now it seems to be back in fashion. But you're really going for drinks that were popular at one point and have kind of fallen off the radar, if you will.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, there are a lot of cocktail books out there right now in terms of how was I going to distinguish this book. I really wanted to focus on drinks that, for most people, they genuinely would not have heard of these historical drinks before. They are lost cocktails. They're not ones that you can walk into most restaurants and order. So you won't see a martini recipe here. You won't see, you know, the sidecar. You won't see a recipe for a Bloody Mary. You will see a recipe for a Red Snapper, which is St. Regis's historical version of a Bloody Mary. But for the more mainstream cocktails, I figured that there are so many experts out there who know how to make those things that I could probably be better served in introducing lost beverages.
Now, one of your great sources was a bartender from the late 19th century named Jerry Thomas. And you have several of his recipes. And I guess he's one of the first guys that wrote a cocktail manual, if you will.
Yeah, Jerry Thomas, he's great. He often gets referred to as America's father of mixology. And sometimes he was called Professor Thomas, and he was, you know, not really credited with a degree that anybody can see. But his level of expertise seemed to merit that accolade. And so Professor Thomas was the first to issue a cocktail book in America in 1862. And like we were talking about before, the difference between a drink and a cocktail. So Professor Thomas was one of the first to really imbue a cocktail, a mixed drink, with a sort of a showmanship. I mean, you know, you go into other saloons at the time and you can practically see like a gorilla serving you a drink, you know, a whiskey shot across the bar, and you go into,
right,
you know, Jerry
Slam
Thomas's.
Down.
Exactly. And you want another one? But Professor Thomas, who was based in San Francisco, I mean, he was always wearing a spotless white jacket and, according to some sources, a diamond festooned shirt, and had a walrus mustache. And he grew so famous that he apparently toured Europe with a set of solid silver bar utensils and wowed the courts of Europe with his new artistry of cocktails. So he's a very famous figure in the world of mixology.
Now let's talk about a couple of his drinks. One is the Blue Blazer, which was created around 1850. And there's a great story with that. And it was very popular in the late 19th century. And I don't think anybody's drunk a Blue Blazer in a long, long time.
Yeah, you kind of need a really strong home insurance policy if you're going to attempt the Blue Blazer. I recreate the recipe in the book. And by the way, every recipe that I cite in the book can be recreated with modern versions of the liquors. There's no recipe in here that is obscure. But the Blue Blazer was invented by Jerry Thomas, and supposedly one day a customer came into his saloon, sidled up to Professor Thomas and said something like, "Fix me up some hellfire that'll shake me right down to me gizzard." Now, I don't know how Professor Thomas managed to interpret those instructions into the specific recipe, but he went to his bar and he fiddled around a little bit, and then he made a grand announcement to his patrons that they were about to witness something historic. So he had two mugs, and then from one mug to the other poured this flaming liquid back and forth between the two. So you just saw a stream of flames going back and forth. And so the customer, who wanted his gizzard to be warm, chugged this down. And everybody, you know, the room silenced, and everybody looked at him, and he said, "Yes, he done it. He done it. He warmed me right down into me gizzard," and the Blue Blazer was born. Right then and there. And so that was one of the drinks that put Jerry Thomas on the map. And it was, you know, again, it was all about the showmanship. And it's just scotch, boiling water, lemon peel, sugar, and you just set it on fire. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and then you actually switch it from glass to glass a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and another one he's famous for is the Knickerbocker cocktail.
The Knickerbocker is another really great drink that should not have gone out of style. Knickerbocker was a Dutch name that was many of New York's earliest colonists had the name, and it kind of became an emblem for, you know, a great name in the city. And so this drink was made in honor of that name and that clan, and it's actually referred to as a fancy drink as opposed to a cocktail. And it has in it lime, raspberry syrup, rum, curacao, and shaved ice, and you can put berries in it for garnish. So it's actually surprisingly sweet.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, definitely like you'll be seeing your dentist a lot more if you're drinking a lot of these. You know, unlike the Blue Blazer, which is about, you know, as manly and hardcore as you can get, and then you have, you know, this very sweet pink drink. But it's really delicious. So, again, Jerry Thomas, you know, at a very early stage knew what he was doing. And so these drinks were spectacular to look at, and they also tasted really good. And people started to realize that, you know, as fun as it is to just, you know, go up to the saloon bar and, you know, guzzle down a whiskey, that they might be onto something with these cocktail things.
My guest today is Leslie Bloom, an author and journalist. She covers fashion, media, and culture. Her latest book is titled Let's Bring Back, which is actually a book she had in 2010. She's now got a series of books, and the first one in that new series, Let's Bring Back, it's the cocktail edition, as we talk about, you know, having a cocktail as the holidays approach and a great party. And this is one of the things you told me off air, says, you know, I had several hangovers in researching this book. I assume a lot of these are really good holiday sort of party drinks.
Yes, and by the way, more than just a few hangovers, because again, there are 144 recipes in the book, and we tested, you know, all of them. So I really took a hit for the team, guys.
now you mentioned going to the Dennismore. There's actually one that is utterly bizarre, and I think it struck you as utterly bizarre. And that's the Gingivitis cocktail.
Oh, it's so hilariously repulsive that I had to include it. And, you know, the caveat, okay, if there are 144 recipes in this book, 143 of them you'll want to drink. This is the one you will not want to drink. So a lot of the drinks that I found that were not included, you're just like, how could this possibly have been made? And the gingivitis one was one of them, and it's a really rather putrid mix of gin, grenadine, cream, and ice cubes. And, you know, the grenadine and the ice cube really, and the cream really do seem to evoke the components of gingivitis.
Ugh. Yeah.
And it just... And so I had to do a little sidebar on it, and, you know, we titled that sidebar The Least Appetizing Drink in History, and I think that I am willing to stack that up against any other one that anybody wants to put forth as the most repulsive.
Well, I have to tell you the other one, which I thought sounded like a waste of good wine, is the claret cup, which is basically taking a bottle of Bordeaux and adding things to it. But it tasted good?
I mean, the claret cup, which is cups are it's wine with fruit and liqueur and that kind of thing in it. It's an acquired taste, and usually when I was trying to replicate some recipe from one of these more obscure categories like the cup, I tried to find something that would appeal to at least somebody, today. I actually really like the claret cup. Think about this. I mean, sangria is actually its own version of a claret cup in terms of having a doctored bottle of wine. I mean, of course, you probably don't want to use, a treasured bottle of claret to make this, but, a fair to middling bottle of claret that's doctored up with, sugar and Benedictine brandy, maraschino liqueur and seltzer, lemon and fruit slices, or frosted fruit is so beautiful. In this drink, it's actually it's a really civilized version of a punch.
Mm. Now, one of the interesting cocktails that I thought would look really interesting was, it's basically a Bloody Mary, but instead of using tomato juice, you're using beef bouillon. It's called the Bull Shot.
Yes, I actually really love this drink, and it's going to be perfect for readers this fall and winter because it's a served warm drink. Or it can be served warm or cold. People feel very adamantly one way or about the other. People have actually pretty violently extreme feelings about their cocktails, I have found out. This one, the recipe that I referenced, came mostly from the legendary mid-century bartender Trader Vic, and he advocated that it should be kind of put in a thermos and sips at a cold ball game. And so in this one, you're using beef bouillon, Worcestershire sauce, Tabasco, pepper, salt, vodka, and a lemon slice for garnish. And it's just so delicious, perfect for cold weather picnics or, as Trader Vic says, a game. If you're feeling like you want to be really nostalgic, I've also included a recipe for a beef bouillon that was created by the great screen actress Marlene Dietrich, who apparently was a great home chef and used to make this beef bouillon for all of her lovers.
And it's called a beef tea is what she called it. And it's
exactly
4 pounds of round steak cut into cubes. You put it in a mason jar. Then you heat that closed jar, I guess, in boiling water for about 4 hours. And it makes liquid.
Yeah, she called them liquid steaks. And apparently, not many of her world famous lovers ever didn't actually take her up on having them. So, I mean, that's a beef bouillon with a sexy history. Who knew?
You also have a section on famous women drinks from this early age of, Prohibition. And this was, I guess, the age of the cocktail. There's the Garbo Gargle, the Mae West, there's a Ginger Rogers, there's, virtually every big screen actress of the 20s and 30s had a cocktail named after them.
Yeah, I really loved that. The Garbo Gargle was the most hilariously named, so we included the recipe for that. And apparently Greta Garbo, her first line when she made the leap from being a silent star to being a speaking movie star, and remember, not many movie stars actually made that leap successfully. Anyway, Garbo's first line in her first talking film was alcohol-related. She said, in that classic Garbo accent, "Give me a whiskey, ginger ale on the side, and don't be stingy, baby." and I just really love that. That was from Anna Christie from 1930. So we have a drink that was named after her. And then also Marlene Dietrich had, who was Garbo's great competitor during that period of time, had a drink named after her. Mary Pickford, Rosalind Russell, Jean Harlow, Mae West. So if it's named after Mae West, it has to be a pretty opinionated cocktail, a voluptuous cocktail. So that's in the book as well. And also the Ginger Rogers, and ginger was one of my great favorites.
And of course, that's another theme in the book is all the sexual innuendo having to do with cocktails. And of course, we know all the ones today, but there's some great old titles, some which we can say on the radio and some we can't, but Between the Sheets, that's an old fashioned. And the one I kind of love for the name is the Bosom Caresser.
Oh, I love that. I mean, some of the, some of the names are so unbelievably naughty and you just can't believe that they came from the eras that they did. And so I have a list of what we call love potions or vintage drinks with suggestive names, and I'll let your listeners discover those on their own so I don't embarrass anybody. But, there are some pretty naughty connotations to these drinks.
My guest today is Leslie Bloom. Her latest book is titled Let's Bring Back the Cocktail Edition. These are about 140, 150 drink concoctions, great cocktails from history that have sort of fallen by the wayside. And she says these are really good drinks. And their recipes, as well as great stories about a lot of these drinks. You know, what interesting is what comes up, as you mentioned Jerry Thomas earlier, in sort of these legendary clubs where a lot of these cocktails were invented, like the Stork Club, and you mentioned St. Regis. These were the places of where new cocktails were created a lot of times.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating to see where cocktails originated. And, you know, a lot of them are associated with famous hotels or social clubs, and a lot of them are just simply associated, as we've talked about, with famous bartenders. You know, a lot of the grand hotels, you know, like the St. Regis and also the Savoy was a huge source. You know, Harry's Bar in Paris, the Ritz in Paris. I mean, all of these hotels have had their great drinks, and they trademark those drinks, and they become a part of the hotel or the club's history. And that was one of the things that was pretty joyous about researching this book, and I hope will be pretty fun for readers also, is that the drinks aren't just about, you know, drinking something delicious. You know, when you're reading the recipes and you read the backstories, there are these portals into social history. Mm-hmm. And you get to learn about, you know, the people who made them and who drank them and what the time period was like and what the hotels were like where they were drunk. And it was very fascinating.
Hemingway was one where, you know, when you read his prose, you know, there's this drinking ethos in it. And bartenders were making drinks about Hemingway through most of his life, too, weren't they?
Yeah, and even, you know, Hemingway himself supposedly concocted a drink called Death in the Afternoon, which was the title of one of his books. And, I mean, when you hear what the ingredients are of this drink, you'll understand why it's called Death in the Afternoon. It's just literally adding iced champagne to a jigger of absinthe in a champagne glass. So can you imagine? And then he says, in typical Hemingway style, drink 3 to 5 of these slowly. So, I mean, can you imagine drinking 3 to 5 champagne flutes filled with absinthe and champagne? I mean, you're going to be dead in 1 second. But, you know, they were apparently a great favorite, and they're sort of apparently making a comeback. Other drinks that are associated with Hemingway are the mojito,
a good one.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, mojitos are really popular now, but I couldn't help but include an Old Guard recipe for that also. And then also one called the Papa Doble, which was sort of a Hemingway daiquiri, which was allegedly created for him down at Sloppy Joe's Bar in Key West. And that was rum, limes, and grapefruit, juice from half a grapefruit with maraschino liqueur.
Of course, there are other drinks that are starting to come back. A lot of times you're starting to see fizzes come back, and you have a whole section on fizzes.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the fizz, and that is probably where I earned my most vicious hangovers when I was researching this
book. So beware.
Yes, exactly. Well, because the thing that's so great about the fizz is it's a really adaptable drink. And I'll just give you a sense of, you know, what it is, and then we can talk about why it's so adaptable. But so it's a combination of gin, lemon or lime juice and sugar, and it's shaken with ice. You strain it into a cocktail coupe, and you top it off with seltzer. And there are so many different variations. So you can either use, you know, an egg white or a whole egg or just the yolk, and, you know, then it's known as a diamond fizz or a silver fizz, depending on, you know, which ingredient you use. Now today, a lot of simple syrups are being made that are flavored. And so you can plug those into the fizz. And so I had simple syrups that had cardamom in them or chili flavored or whatever. And you just start making all these wildly different variations on the fizz, and they're so unbelievably good. They're, you know, perfect brunch cocktails. If you're making a savory one, they end up being really great for holiday parties. You do have to kind of do them one at a time, so it's probably better for smaller parties or if you have a bartender standing aside to help you make them. But, I mean, really just totally wonderful personality-filled drinks. I can't get enough of those.
Well, let's talk about a couple of drinks as the holiday season approaches, you know, parties. Give us a couple of good drink recipes that would be fun to just sort of spring on guests this holiday season. You know, if you have a gathering, just you know, an interesting drink that people haven't heard about in a long time, and that is going to please most palates?
Well, I think, this isn't necessarily a cocktail, but I do have to throw this out there. I think that one thing that would always impress a guest is if you create a champagne tower, which is when you just create circles of champagne coupes, and you pour champagne or Prosecco into the top glass, and it flows down to the bottom glasses. And there is never anything more celebratory than that. And I honestly think that nothing for holidays tops a diamond fizz, which is when you use an entire egg in your gin fizz. And instead of topping it off with seltzer, you top it off with champagne.
Ah.
And in the book, I include a recipe for something called the raspberry diamond fizz, which it seems so far among people who have read the book to have been one of the most popular recipes. And it's gin, raspberry liqueur, egg whites, lemon juice, and then fresh raspberries and crushed ice, and then you top it off with champagne. And it's just, like a dessert and a cocktail all in one.
Now, after all this exhaustive research, Leslie, what's the cocktail you're tending to these days now that, the book is out? Is there one that sort of stuck with you?
Well, I think my favorite one, just taste-wise, not necessarily narrative-wise, is called the Great Ziegfeld Cocktail, which is named after the legendary showman Florence Ziegfeld, the force of nature behind the Ziegfeld Follies. And I found this recipe was so great because I didn't find it in a book. I found it in narrative form. And when his wife,
yes.
Billy Burke,
This is the good witch of the, the good witch from The Wizard of Oz, yeah, right?
Yes, that's how most people today would probably remember her. She was one of his great Ziegfeld Follies stars, and then she became Ziggy's wife. And I think she had been in a newspaper interview, and somebody asked, what did your great husband drink? And she said, Ziggy used to prepare 2/3 gin and 1/3 pineapple juice, with the rim of the glass moistened in lemon juice or lime, then twirled in powdered sugar, served very cold. And then she stopped for a minute, and she said, at least she always twirled the first 2 or 3 in powdered sugar, and after that it didn't matter. And you always do get to the second or the third drink, because these is the Great Ziegfeld Cocktail. It's really delicious. It's probably my favorite one. It's more of a summer drink.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a huge fan of the Bullshot, which we talked about, that has the beef bouillon instead of tomato juice. But those were probably my favorite summer-winter drinks of the entire series.
All right. The name of the book is Let's Bring Back the Cocktail Edition. Leslie Bloom, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Leslie Bloom speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her book is titled Let's Bring Back the Cocktail Edition, a compendium of impish, romantic, amusing, and occasionally appalling potations from bygone eras. It's published by Chronicle Books. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent shows, we've had several on food in the last few days. Look us up at publicradiotulsa.org. Just search for Studio Tulsa and you can search the archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.